point of balance rather than than go off to the extremes. So like in the afternoon and so forth, really, don't aim at kind of getting samadhi and all that, but really be mindful of the way it is, of what you're doing, of what, when you sit down, what are you aimed to do first thing? And not to judge it, but just to notice. And one develops meditation habits. Meditation can be just a habit you've developed. So you sit down and you go into an automatic gear, because it's a habit rather than a mindfulness. So when you sit, you notice you can observe, how do you feel physically, like in the afternoon or in the morning. Not to judge it, there's no way you should feel, but just to be aware. Because if you've got the ideas that you've got to do this and do that with your mind, you're not always taking into account the way your body is at that time. So you're just trying to suppress it and drive it with your mind. So this is where mindfulness, reflection of the, to see how you, the physical thing is. Then with so many of you, you really drive the physical, you kind of push it. You're not mindful and you're not kind to it. You tend to want to discipline it and beat it into obedience, or ignore it, suppress it, just not be bothered. Because I think that's what our society tends to do, isn't it? And if you've been in the military, society tends to be one where you're filled with ideas about how things should be, and then you try to make your body obey. But a human body is a very limited condition, isn't it? It can only it very clearly defined in limited form. So it can only do so much. I mean, if you're very strong-willed, you can make it do kind of wonderful feats sometimes, like Olympic athletes. I mean, some of them must, with their minds, they must, what they do to their bodies is, they must have to pay a terrible price for that. But they, because you can, I mean, you're young and healthy and you've got a tremendous ambition and drive, you can make your body do all kinds of things. But so that the body is, there was that woman runner that she was, what was that, American, she's very ambitious, remember a few years ago? And during the big race, she tripped over somebody. Yeah. He was an incredibly ambitious person. And she was so ambitious, and they said she couldn't sit still for a moment, even when she was home. She had to walk, they had to have people go jog with her so they could pace her, because she'd be caught in this incredible speed. And this so they'd have to have people kind of pace her, so she'd have to slow down to keep up with somebody who couldn't be so far. And the body becomes so addicted, her body becomes so addicted to this, that she didn't have much control over it anymore. It's just driving the body, so the body becomes addicted to that, and it's no longer under control. And then when she fell over on the Olympic race, pictures of her, just a incredible Soka Pariteva Tukatoka Mantra. Absolute misery over what to most of us doesn't matter. I don't suffer if Venerable Santa can run faster than I do. So the body, if it's not respected and treated properly, then it becomes, you know, you can for a while get away with it, but then you have to pay the price. It becomes weak or arthritic. And I heard the famous dancer Nureyev now, he's completely kind of ossified and with arthritis. And he could perform these fantastic leaps and so forth. Now he's just, you know, he's what, about 50 or so, and an incredible pain and stiffness, because the magnificence of the dance when you're young, but maybe the not the proper concern and respect for the limits of a human body, and you pay the price. And in our life, we're not trying to, it's not a life, as you well know, to it's not competitive or demanding life, or that we have to make ourselves, to make our bodies into something, but to reflect on them. We're not trying to deny them and just suppress them or reject them from our, but the Gayanupassana, Vedananupassana, the foundations of mindfulness, are based on recognizing the nature and limitation of a human body, one's own body, and the Vedana, the feeling. How this is the realm of feeling and sensitivity. We're not trying to become insensitive and suppress feelings and reject the body, but really understand and fully understand these very conditions that we find ourselves involved in for a lifetime. Because you'll have a body and feeling for the rest of your life. Won't you? And it can be pretty horrible if you don't learn, understand it. It can be pretty painful, miserable thing as you get older. The body's revenge for being mistreated when you're young takes revenge on you. I always contemplated what if there is enlightenment, what could it possibly be? What is enlightenment in the sense of, if you, the word, you think you understand, don't you? You can, you know, Buddhist enlightenment, yes, Buddha was enlightened. But because that is a legend, isn't it? And Buddha is a special, I mean, the whole Jataka, previous lives were all special events of a special being. And so sometimes you it becomes an exalted thing, something so far, so high up, so rarefied that you're always waiting for something absolutely fantastic, and you're missing out the way things are. The enlightenment of a moment can be completely unnoticed because you're thinking of enlightenment as a super duper fantastic experience. So really, contemplate if there is enlightenment, if there's non-ignorance, what is it? And the Buddha gives very clear direct attachment to the conditioned realm is not it. Because if you're trying to become enlightened or to get rid of defilements or do something on this conditioned plane, it will always take you to grief, sorrow, despair and anguish, old age, sickness and death. So obviously attachment to conditioned realm is not enlightenment. So then non-attachment, the logic follows from there, non-attachment. But we have to recognize that the conditioned realm is very much what we're very much involved with is through birth as human beings. So we can't just wipe it out and ignore it, but to understand it, understand the conditioned realm so thoroughly that there's no delusion, no doubt about what its true nature is. This is what the vipassana is about. It's such a thorough investigation of the conditioned realm that it leaves nothing in your mind to be deluded about, from the subtle conditions to the coarse. All conditions, if not the special conditions or ordinary conditions, extreme conditions or mediocre conditions, whatever, good and bad and heaven and hell, the whole range, the whole gamut is to be seen as for what it is. This is what in the characteristics, the dhyalakkhana, the three characteristics, help us to really investigate that way, so that just the subtlety of your mind, just a feeling or a half perception or a vagueness is seen, it can be witnessed as anicca, rather than just, if you're not mindful, then you tend to ignore some of the subtler mental formations that you have, because you're always aiming at something big, something extreme. So when I emphasize the ordinariness, it's not because I like mediocrity and ordinary things and don't want the extremities of anything, not that, but the ordinariness and the subtlety of ordinariness is not noticed until you pay attention, until you reflect on it. One time when I was a first Vasa monk, and I used to do this, I used to play with my mind a lot. So I developed these signs in my mind, because I got bored with vipassana. So I'd do something extreme. So I liked the color green. So I decided to develop a meditation on green. So then I visualized this green light in my head. And then I kept, but it, because I wasn't very good at visualizing things, and I kept, and my mind was a doubting mind, I kept green light, and I kept this kind of dim flickering green light. And I couldn't hold on to it. I thought, this is, I can't do it. But then I realized that the negativity was the problem. You had to be totally positive. So I said, next 3 minutes, I'll just be totally positive with this. And so I managed to maintain a positive green light where it wasn't the flickering dim one. And so Then I'll make it into absolutely radiant green light. I thought, well, just do it, make it completely beautiful and radiant. So, But you had to be totally positive. If you started thinking this isn't true or this is an illusion, it goes out. So, but just by sustaining a totally positive, total belief in the green light, then I made this very beautiful radiant green light in my head that now creates the most beautiful green light in the whole universe. The most absolutely, utterly beautiful, scintillating green light in the whole universe. And well, how do I know my green light is? Maybe there's a more beautiful one. Shut up, just make it. So I created in my head the universal, the most beautiful universal green light. I've seen it for myself. I made it and created it. There's not a green light more beautiful than the one I can create, I know. Well, what is that? That is a function of your mind, isn't it? You think it's not real, but or it's just fantasy. And it is imagination, isn't it? But it's the power of the mind to create things. And so then you can, and we do it all the time, but we don't know we're doing it. I mean, what you think you are as a person is just because you believe that you are something. It's like, I mean, you don't think you're a green light, but you might think you're a person. And you've never questioned it because it's a total belief, unquestioned belief in being somebody or something. So that there's never any doubt about it, so it never goes out, never flickers, because you've never questioned it. The green light flickers because, like when I first started, I didn't really believe in it. I was creating it quite with deliberate intention. So it was playing a game, really, so I didn't really believe in it. And I realized if I wanted to create the most beautiful green light in the universe, you had to totally believe in it, at least to get it at that point. Now that was an experiment with something that with just with developing positive images. You have to be positive. As soon as the negative state comes in, the doubt, the hesitation, aversion, then those things disappear. What you've created disappeared. Now therefore, like with Vipassana, you're not trying to create a positive personality anymore, are you? You're not trying to think, I am the love and life of God, and I am the child of the Lord, and I am this, and I am that. But you can do that, and you get very high, like the green light. You can become the most radiant, lovely person in the whole universe by positive affirmation. But what becomes, remember, bhava vajjaya jati, jati vajjaya jaramaranang. So even though you might become the most beautiful, radiant person in the whole universe, just like my green light, it doesn't last. It goes out. Because you have to sustain it, you have to keep feeding it all the time, making it that way. Out of ignorance, the idea of being a person is that you're so in the habit of creating and believing that you are something that there's never any question and any doubt about it till you do vipassana. Then the vipassana will put the question and the doubt into your mind, like anatta. And as you contemplate anatta more, then the flickering of personality appears. You realize personality isn't a kind of permanent, solid thing. It's not really what I am. I'm not really that person or this or that quality. That's not really what I am. It's not because you've managed to put a question mark and a hesitation into the whole process. So then you begin to let go of the that ignorant belief that you are something, and then that will fade out. That will cease, the cessation. And when there's cessation, then there's peace. What's left after you've let your personality go and not created anything is contentment and peace and calm and clarity, intelligence, which isn't personal. It's not mine, not yours, but it's what, where we meet, where we merge, where we're not separate. But on the conditioned realm, we're always going to, there's always this resistance and conflict because we're caught in the limitation of conditions, and we're always going to conflict or never quite unite, are we? We never, on the conditioned realm, we can't ever really have any kind of permanent union or real lasting communion on the conditioned plane, because it's just impossible. Conditions don't allow for that. And unconditioned, then we find that with what are called our true home, our real home. So it's not a kind of feelingless vacuum of of annihilation, but it's what it is. It's completeness. Wholeness.